Hey guys, welcome to the Delta Flyers. As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and of course, Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
How you doing?
Hello there, sir. How are you?
I am dealing with a bout of insomnia. It's just, I don't know, the last few days, maybe up to a week, I've been having a horrible time falling asleep. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure something out. So any suggestions?
You know, what's funny is I started, I read this article not long ago called Walking for Health or something. I think it was geared towards older people.
Oh.
But like me. But it's funny because I go in and out of exercise routines, but this was basically saying, look, you know, get out anywhere from, you know, 1 to 2 hours or so, somewhere in there, you know, 60 to 90 minutes or 120 minutes, but get out for an hour or two, walk every day. Doesn't have to be like intense, you know, Olympic walking. It just needs to be a walk.
So this is a mile or a couple miles? How long is the
Said anywhere from 2 to 5 miles was the recommendation, you know, depending okay. on what you're trying to achieve. But, you know, a minimum of 2 miles every day.
Yeah.
And make it a practice. And it was talking about how you start there and then you find that time, that hour every day for a walk. And then maybe you make it a little harder. But over time, you find whatever works for you. But it's not that, basically, it's not that hard. And maybe that would help you, like taking a walk every day.
Yeah.
Would just be that little bit of, you know, fresh air and getting outside. Although you're in Vegas right now, and it's super hot there.
Exactly. A walk outside. Maybe not 2 miles. Maybe a mile would be the max. I don't know. And plus, like last night, it did not help. I was supposed to meet my buddy John Andrews for dinner.
Yeah.
We had a 6:45 dinner reservation at a really awesome sushi place in Mandalay Bay, and so I'm there at 6:30. I'm there early, and so I asked the hostess, I'll sit down, and then so 6:45 comes by, no John. 6:50, 7, no John. 7:50, now I'm worried. So now I'm texting him, thinking, oh my god, did he get into an accident? Because that's all I could think of. I mean, there's no, and when you're looking at the text thread, there is no check mark saying that he's seen my text. Like, they're not even read, and I'm thinking, oh no, he's in the hospital. What is happening? And so then now we're finally, I think it was it was probably like 7:20. So what is it, what's the difference here? 6:30 to 7:20, so it's like 50 minutes I get a text, and he's like, oh my god, I'm so sorry. He had taken a nap and slept through his alarm, so he so he was alive. So by the time he got there, it was closer to probably 8 o'clock when he got there. And so I essentially ate two dinners.
Two meals.
The sushi chef, after John showed up and I ate again with John, the sushi chef was looking at me. He's like, I can't believe how much you ate. I said, well, what am I? I'm just sitting here. I don't know what to do. You know, I just kept ordering. I'm like, all right. Oh my goodness. And so that, you know, by the time I got out of there, it was quite late. Right. And so that
was a good sushi.
Oh, excellent. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Really, really good. And that's one of the best things about Las Vegas is that in the old days, it was come to Vegas and get your prime rib and shrimp cocktail. And, you know, it was very
cheap buffet,
very cheap buffet, very pedestrian kind of fare. And then now every major chef in the world has a restaurant here, you know, and some of the best sushi. Because if you wanted really good sushi back in the day, it was Los Angeles. You got to be in LA, you know, you've got to go to Matsuhisa. You've got to do all, you know, got to go to all these great LA places. And then everyone else was just everywhere in the country was like, so people were just kind of getting into sushi, right? Back in the 90s. And now, oh my goodness, you can't even throw, you could be in Vegas and throw a rock and it'll hit a sushi restaurant. There's so many sushi places.
Oh, there's so many good restaurants in Vegas for sure.
Definitely.
Well, all right. try to take a walk. Start with that.
I will.
You know, or some kind of exercise every
yeah.
day.
Just no. exercise. Yeah, that'll get kind of get me into the point where I my body will be tired to go.
Your
to
body sleep. Will be a little more tired. Yeah, that'll help key. You.
Okay, cool. This week's episode is real life. So real life.
Yeah. Here we go. Yeah, I'm excited to see this. I remember this episode a bit and
nice.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Okay, let's go watch this.
And, let's go watch it.
Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. Thanks, guys. Hey, guys, Robbie and I are back from watching Real Life. And
yes, we are.
Yes, we have a little bit of a hiccup. Robbie's entire set of notes have been deleted. What happened was his phone was low on battery, so he went to go grab a charger, and whilst holding his phone, I guess his fingers hit on something and everything deleted.
I had too many things in my hand. I must have hit delete, and I can't undelete it. So
no. And I'm
beside myself, but I'm gonna wing it.
He's gonna wing it, and this is exactly. I told Robbie, you know, don't worry. I'll run the recap. You just chime in when you can. This is exactly what happened when we reviewed the episode Faces, when we had Brian Markinson as a guest.
Yeah.
I had done the same thing. I touched my phone the wrong way when I was just, you know, moving it from one place to another, and all of my notes for Faces were gone. So I had to wing it as well. So you're gonna wing it here. Okay.
All right.
All right. Here we go. You got it. All right. Well, let's just start off with our poetry synopsis. At least you have that. So let's begin.
I remember that because
it's haiku. It's simple. If you had a limerick, you probably wouldn't have remembered it. But probably you have a haiku. So
let's start with that.
Yeah. What's your haiku? Let's hear it.
Doc wants a family. Perfection is too easy. Real life is messy. There you go.
Perfect. And that last line is such a great line. Real life is messy. You end up deleting notes randomly. See? So this is perfect. It works.
Right on theme.
It's right on theme.
All right.
Okay.
What's your limerick?
All right. Here's my limerick. Doctor programs his own hollow family. It's really not what he expects it to be. Astral eddies appear. We've lost Paris, we fear. His shuttle breaks free from the anomaly.
That's good.
Yeah, see?
That's good.
I like seeing you smile.
Yeah. Paris was big in that limerick.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was sitting there going like, how do I, because it's right down the middle. You've got the doctor storyline with the family, and you've got Paris, you know, going into this Eddie. That's split right down the middle. So I said, which way should I go?
I think the doctor's story is so much bigger. I feel like Paris's story. No, that's not even a pair.
He
gets to fly a shuttle in a cool. It was cool.
Yeah,
it was. I did think that was cool.
Yes,
but
yes,
there was some cool stuff. But my favorite part of Paris's story was the scene in sickbay where he got to tell the doctor what real life is like.
Right.
That to me, was I've forgotten that scene was in this episode, but that one of my favorite scenes that I ever did on Voyager.
Yeah, it's a great scene. And, you know, my limerick, really, it's skewed towards Paris because this is the Delta Flyers, which is basically yourself and me. And if it was myself and Bob Picardo, then I would have made it more about the doctor, but I didn't. I made it more about you, the ending part.
I think this is a Tom Paris episode.
So we enter the opening scene. We see the Hollow family home, and I just want to say that every time that we're in an alien residence in Voyager, there's always some type of modern furnishings going on. You know, that's typically what, and that has always been my aesthetic in terms of how I design or how I will furnish my own home, my own space, you know, has always been that modern aesthetic. So I've always enjoyed seeing our sets because I go, oh yeah, that gives me an idea for doing this.
Yeah,
you know,
funny.
So
you're right, because every time we go to an alien, you know, home or office or lab or whatever, it kind of looks like Starfleet adjacent design.
Yes.
Always, which I know is natural because, you know, it's the same. It's a sci-fi show. It's the same designer, but it would be interesting to see some real different design of furniture and materials and finishes and lines, because it pretty much, I mean, for this, the doctor's home, that should look like a Starfleet adjacent place, because he's that's what he knows. But when we go to some of these planets, that's where I wish there was more, you know, I don't know, just variety and finishes and, and materials and things like that. But anyway,
Good point. I hear you. Now, so we are now introduced to our guest stars. We have Wendy Shaw playing the role of the wife, who we later find out her name is Charlene. And my goodness, I'm watching her on screen thinking, she's giving me these Shelley Long vibes. Shelley Long from Cheers.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
Staring at her going, Shelley Long could have played this role just as well as Wendy Shaw, but Wendy Shaw did a great job doing
it. She did a great job, yeah.
Glenn Harris plays Jeffrey, the son. A good job there. And Lindsay Houn as the daughter, Belle. Again, another good performance from a child actor, really.
Yeah, she was great. And this is hard for all three of those guest stars you mentioned. They've got to start. So this first scene, it's the perfect, you know, doctor family.
Yes.
They're exactly what he wants them to be. He's programmed them to listen to him, to be responsible and respectful, and just think that he is the most amazing father and doctor in the world.
That's right.
And that's where we are in our story. That's the actors had to play that almost sitcom version.
Yes.
And then make a total transition as we get into the story. We'll talk about it. To a very different kind of characters almost. So
not only was it the sitcom version, to me, it was a very 50s sort of feel to it. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Father Knows Best.
Yes.
Happy Days. Well, Anson Williams.
Anson Williams. Yes. So that's what I was going to say. Directed by Anson Williams. Story by my friend, Harry Doc Clore, who I have spent many, many times hanging out with. And teleplay by Jerry Taylor. And typically Jerry doesn't do a lot of teleplays. So this one, you know, this one is from her. And Anson Williams, I remember when he came on set, I was so excited because
everybody was so excited.
Well, you know, we all grew up with Happy Days, right?
Potsy
from Happy Days. And, you know, I've always been a big fan of Happy Days as a child and continue to be. So seeing Potsy as our director was my fanboy moment a little bit, right?
Oh,
what a great guy, though. Super nice guy off camera.
Super nice guy.
Yep. And a good director as well. He knows what he's doing. So that's wonderful.
He was a perfect director for this episode because of exactly what you mentioned. I think that those early scenes were almost, Happy Days.
Happy Days like,
Something very, very, very similar. Anyway, so we meet them and the doctor has a wonderful time and they all literally were like choreographed.
They were
at the same time. Like, it was great.
Both son and daughter are putting their foot out when the mom asks, have you polished your shoes? And
they both,
it was like synchronized swimming. They completely had everything down to a science of how, when to turn, to look. And it was very humorous to me, that alone.
Yeah,
right?
I agree.
Now we jump to the bridge and we're about to rendezvous with the Vostagai space station and we get to where we're supposed to get to and Harry detects a debris field. And I just want to note right now, all of my lines sound like I have a cold. Every single one on the bridge. Yes.
That's funny. Cause I thought you sounded very relaxed and natural. And
It was natural, but it was still
nice
nasally.
I thought you were very naturalistic in a good way. You know, I think sometimes our performance standard that we would do was always a little elevated and
stylized, presentational.
I feel like our cast sort of as a group, that was sort of our approach.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see when some of us, you know, are more relaxed. And I thought you did a really nice naturalistic job in the episode.
Yeah. And I really felt that I kind of got away with that almost because I feel that a lot of times when we do a more naturalistic delivery, we get reprimanded for it. Yeah. You know, what are you guys doing? But, you know, maybe because Anson Williams was there at the, I was able to get away with that. So anyway, there are 60 scientists on that station, but when we get there, it's just a debris field. So it has completely been annihilated. And Janeway's upset. She's angry and wants to know who would annihilate a science station.
Who would do this?
Yes, because science is a big part of her life, right? Yeah.
And Tuvok scans things and he's like, there's no weapon signatures. I think it was Tuvok or maybe you.
Yeah.
But we scan and there's no residual weapon signatures. So that's strange.
Nothing. Harry detects a trail of plasma particles in subspace. Yeah. And Janeway tells Paris, set a course to follow
it. Set a course.
Yeah.
And he says, yes, ma'am.
Yes. There we have another yes, ma'am from Tom Paris. Exactly. We jumped.
We're going to have another yes, ma'am later on from someone else.
But... Okay. We jump to sick bay.
Yeah.
And now Torres, who I want to first comment that she now has this new side braid in her hair. Like one side of her hair has that one braid, which I'm thinking, huh, is she letting her hair down a little bit or is this a new style for her? We don't know, but she's running tests on the doctor's program to make sure everything
upkeep.
Yeah, is running smoothly. That's all. And the doctor has basically been tinkering with his program to improve his performance as a physician. And that's why he created a family. This is news to Torres. She's like, you have a family. Well, I'd like to meet your family. And we see Kes as well.
B'Elanna and Kes both want to come to dinner. Mm-hmm. And the doctor's very happy because he's very proud of this perfect family he's got. So he's like, yes, let's, you know, my wife has been asking for my colleagues to come by. So yes.
Did he call her my little,
my little woman or something like that.
Yeah. So now they're in the Hollow family home, in the living room. And now we see Belle and Jeffrey, the kids, and Charlene are absolutely perfect. And this is where we learn that the doctor is referred to as Kenneth.
That's right.
Now, I'm wondering, does this have anything to do with Ken Biller?
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Was he there? Yeah, he's there already. Yeah,
he's there from the beginning.
Yeah. So I think maybe they named him Kenneth Biller, possibly. Uh-huh, right. Uh-huh. Torres can't take this. She freezes the program. And then she walks away from the dinner table to have this conversation with the doctor. So my question to you,
she walked away. Yeah,
is that to keep that visual effect away from the action, the current action? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Okay. It's literally only, there's no character reason for her to get up.
No, not at all.
You know, I feel like that was a situation where they got her up and moved her away from the table because the frozen family.
Yeah.
You can't just have actors freeze because they're going to move.
Someone's going to move. Yeah.
Somebody's going to move. You're going to give it away. So they did do that for a moment. The actors froze. And then she got up and walked away so that they could cut back to a point of view of the family frozen.
Right.
But it could have helped there to have a line or something like
A line that
I can't take this anymore, doc. I'm out of here or something.
Exactly. Because now it would have been an organic move because when you're watching it, it's sort of like, wait, why is she doing that? And now, you know, it's because of that visual effect. I do love that line that Torres gives to the doctor. She says, you're not going to learn anything from these lollipops is what she calls them. And Torres says that she can do some tweaking of her own on this Hollow family and bring it closer to real life. And I made note that typically whenever we watch an episode, the title of the episode is never utilized within the episode, but here it is, right?
It's totally utilized. And and it's not only utilized, but Roxanne Dawson puts air quotes around it almost. She's like, she like paused, you know, she's like, you know, I can make some changes that'll make it more like real life.
The name of the episode. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
Yeah. It was kind of, you know, maybe a little too much there. But
So now we're on the bridge and the particle wake that we have been following has kind of thinned out. So Kim detects a subspace disruption and now the anomaly appears. And to me, I wrote down, it looks like a space tornado or a space hurricane or whatever. And then it disappears and no one has ever seen this phenomenon before. This is completely new to everybody on the bridge.
But by the way, it opens up and this thing comes at Voyager and we go to red alert and there's some damage done.
Yes, there's some damage.
Like this waves of this eddy, this whatever it's called.
Astral eddy.
The astral eddy. This wave, it's almost like a hurricane, like you described.
Right.
You know, the outer edges of that hurricane sort of hit Voyager. There is a moment and then all of a sudden it goes whoosh, and sucks back into where it came from. The hurricane just back to the eye. So, Very confusing. And Chakotay says, you know, he's never seen anything like this before.
That's right. And Paris says, you know, I can put some distance between us and what whatever that was. And Janeway's like, oh, no, wait a minute. I would like to investigate this a little bit further from a purely scientific standpoint. And similar to when we encountered that Borg cube, we were like, oh, Janeway's like, let's go investigate. Yeah. Let's get closer to the danger. Yeah, Paris is like, let's get away from the danger. And then Janeway says, let's get closer to the danger, which is, that's the theme in her life, right? She's not afraid of anything. And from the telemetry that we've collected, Chakotay sees that it was an astral eddy that seems to have formed at the confluence of space and subspace.
Yeah.
And that's where it's disappearing. That's why we see it one moment, then it's gone another, and it's highly charged with plasma. So then he wonders, if we can harness some of this energy, guess what? We could go off of these replicator rations for a while. We don't have to conserve energy like that. And so Kim asks, well, how are we going to investigate this if it's gone? Janeway says, let's just set our sensors for continuous scans of subspace to try to anticipate when the next one was going to appear. That pulls us out of the bridge into sick bay, and the doctor is basically told Kes that Torres has added some randomized behavioral algorithms to his Hall of Family program.
Yes, and he seems very, very excited by it. Not concerned at all.
No, not at all. He has no concern. And Kes says, guess what? There might be a few surprises in store for you, and asks the doctor, are you going to be prepared for that? And he's like, well, you know what? My database contains everything I need to know about pediatric care, childhood development. I'm covered. I'm good. And regarding what about your wife's changes? He says, you know what? I've had some experience with romantic relationships, so there shouldn't be any problems. And he's referring to Dinara Pell, the Vidian that he had the relationship with from a prior episode. And so he's, like you said, he doesn't have a care in the world, right?
He's completely naive. Like, it's going to be fine.
Which and then so, sets up, great setup of the next scene.
He leaves Kes and you know, transfers his program into the holodeck. And we see him come in. And all of a sudden you hear, you see him step up to the door. And, you know, he opens this door and you hear this horrible
music.
It would be like sci-fi punk rock.
I guess. Yes.
And by the way, I think, I don't know who the composer was on this, but it they had to have had the composer and an orchestra do this. So it's not like a normal punk rock band.
This is a symphony orchestra that came up with this. Yes.
It's a symphony orchestra impersonating a punk rock band from the future. It's bizarre.
Yes.
It's very creative and experimental and highly irritating.
The wife is late to speak at the Bolian embassy. Bell can't find her ion mallet, and then of course the door, someone's knocking at the door. The doctor goes and answers it, and it's two Klingons. They're asking, where's Jeffrey? And he's like, what, who are you guys?
Two Klingon like teenagers.
Two Klingon teenagers. They're like, we're friends, you know. And like, okay, well, do you have names? And we find out it's Larg and Kakoth, are the two Klingon teenagers. And while this is going on, Bell basically starts crying about the mallet and says that the doctor is mean and she really wants mommy. I want mommy.
Oh, yeah. She ends the act with, I want my mommy. I want my mommy.
Yeah. Have you ever had to deal with that with your kids when they were young, where they said, I want my mommy?
Yes.
So I think every parent, male parent, at least every father, has heard this comment from a daughter,
and I'm sure every mom has heard, I want my daddy. Like, you know, kids are very clever. They play
both sides, don't they?
Anyway, so we come back,
I
think, and it's Paris is in the mess hall.
That's right.
And this was a scene, I gotta say, I didn't particularly like what I did in this scene.
Really?
Not so much. I looked at it, and then, okay, so the scene starts with Paris trying to convince Neelix to give him something different, because he's been eating the same.
It's the fourth day. It's the fourth day of the same Plika rind and grub meal casserole. It's the fourth day. He's sick of it, right?
He's sick of it, and so it felt to me like a, you know, just a courtesy nod to have Neelix do something in the episode.
Yeah.
Only scene.
Yeah.
So Paris had to play that scene, and then Paris had to on a dime turn and go do this romance moment with B'Elanna. So he goes over to B'Elanna, who's eating, and sees she's reading something and takes a look at it. And it's a Klingon romance novel.
Mm-hmm.
And he reads it. And then There's a couple of cheesy lines in there.
Your first cheesy line is your opening line when you walk over and say, "A beautiful woman should never have to eat alone," is your entry line.
There are so many cheesy lines in the scene.
I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was like, oh, that's cute. He's being cheesy. And then he finds out that the book is Women Warriors at the River of Blood. And she says it's just escapist reading. And is this, and of course, he's trying to, you know, grasp the pad, and she's kind of fighting him a little bit, and their hands sort of have a little tug of war. Yeah, this is the nice little flirtation period between Torres and
she's
Paris.
Totally flirting with him.
Yes, she is.
If there's been any doubt up through Blood Fever or whatever that maybe they're not really, she's really flirting with him.
She is, and I love how, you know, he's like, is this a romance novel? And she's talking about, well, for Klingons, romance can be a little bit more vigorous, you know. Yes, he talks about that vigorous. and then he's like, well, I need to read this for sure. Then she's like, well, this isn't a technical manual. And then Paris was like, well, what is it to an engineer or something like that? And she's like, well, to an engineer, it means specializing in particular systems. So it's a very charged, sort of like
double entendre, double meaning.
Yes. And it's just so funny that this is how this conversation is going, this flirtation. And then they start talking about the Doctor's Hollow family, and the flirtation ends because they're interrupted by the appearance of yet another Eddie, Astral Eddie. Right. Did you have any more comments on? Oh, please tell me. So what would you have changed in this scene that you were not happy?
I don't know. I think the double entendres and stuff, I feel like I played them too sitcom-y or too presentational. And I think I should have thrown them away a little more.
Really?
Been a little more subtle. I don't know. I just felt it didn't feel. I don't know.
OK,
that whole storyline, because it you know, there's not much to it in the episode.
Right.
There's this one scene. And then we don't really address it. Even when Paris is in danger, you don't see B'Elanna particularly concerned about him. I didn't think, you know, she was just like every other crew member. Like, we need, you know.
You're talking about later, though. Okay, well, I kind of disagree with you on that, but we'll get to that when we get to that scene. In this scene, I liked everything until the one point. The only thing that I thought was that could have been redone or you know, an alternate version was when she said, well, I'll try not to stab you in the throat, something like that.
Oh,
you know, and you do this little kind of like awkward laugh where you're like, hey, or something like that, and so just that reaction was the only thing that I thought, oh, Robbie could have did something different there. That was it. But everything else I thought worked fine. It didn't bother me. And the truth of the matter, Robbie, is that we are always more critical of ourselves than anybody else. Right. Probably. So I think you're being really picky right now about that. And you're entitled to be picky about that. So I want to hear your opinions. All right.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more.
Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store.
Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
So we go from there, we go to the bridge.
And Janeway wants to send a probe into the anomaly. We're having a really That's rough ride right now due to the graviton waves that the anomaly is throwing off. We do launch the probe. Harry reads the telemetry. There's a temperature gradient of 9 million kelvins, massive discharges of plasmatic energy, and a perfectly calm eye in the center. So Chakotay asks, hey, can we transfer some of it to Voyager? Torres says, well, it can't be transferred because there's too much turbulence. Then the anomaly disappears. And the probe, we find out it's still transmitting. And maybe maybe we can still collect plasma from the wake. And Boussard collectors could be modified to gather plasma particles, according to Tuvok. And Torres says, yeah, that's not a good idea because Voyager's energy emissions are so high that they would actually corrupt the particles. And Hero Tom suggests taking a shuttle out since the energy emissions are much lower from a shuttle. And that's when Torres says that Paris will expose himself to radiation poisoning. So I felt that was her showing some concern. She's like, but wait a minute, you're gonna expose yourself to radiation poisoning. And Janeway says, okay, we'll cover that. Go to sick bay, talk to the doctor, see what he can do. So I do feel like there was some care and concern from her. There was.
Yeah.
I do think this is probably the scene that, over the years, when I go to conventions, I talk about a funny scene that happened on the bridge where Torres is there sitting off to the science station off to the right. She's definitely sitting in that same station. And my story is that when the director called action, when we're being hit by the stuff, like he would yell out like bump or hit like that. And when Roxanne was sitting there, when he said bump, she did this thing like that. Like she just kind of like her whole body went up and down as if, and then the director at the end of that take says, all right, cut. Roxanne, no, we didn't go over a speed bump. Okay. I mean, it's like, and so then we all laughed about that on set. Like Jane, Kate did, Beltran, you did, That's I did. Funny. We had a good laugh about it. And even Roxanne laughed. She's like, oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah. Let me, and this is again, because we're always on the bridge. We know how to move, you know, when we're getting hit on the bridge, when we're getting buffeted around, but with Roxanne always being in engineering, typically she's not part of our group, right? So she's a little bit of a novice. So to see her act like there was a speed bump that we ran over is That's really, funny. Really funny. So I think it was this scene that happened.
Funny. You know, Paris says he can take a shuttle in there and Janeway sends him off to the doctor. And so we find the doctor, looking at Paris and injecting him with some temporary radiation protection.
Right.
For this Eddie
and this is where he talks about his reckless and risky behavior. The doctor starts talking about, well, you must have been the kind of kid that did this and that.
Yeah, you probably did climbed the most dangerous tree.
Yes.
The most dangerous, everything was so dangerous, you didn't care.
You didn't care. What do you know what you would have put your parents through? You know,
that's right. So
he's talking from that, from that.
And then Paris is like, you see Paris go, wait, he's not talking about me anymore.
No,
something else. So Paris goes over and says, so I hear you've created a family on the holodeck.
Yeah.
And the doctor's like, yes, it's been a little challenging, but I've got it all under control now. Yeah. I've analyzed the situation.
And he's come up with a solution, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And that's when you, Paris says, well, it sounds a lot like you're treating a sick patient. Like that's not how you deal with your family. Yeah. You analyze it and come up with a solution on your own. Okay. So now we flash to the Hull family home and there we have, it's family meeting time. So the doctor he's called a meeting at 1600 hours. So 4 PM and Jeffrey's not there. And everyone informs him that he's been sleeping. And the doctor is like, in the afternoon? And of course, Jeffrey kind of stumbles in, kind of groggy. And he admits that he had a late night with his friends. And the doctor is like, okay, here's the revised family schedule and a list of rules and regulations. Mm-hmm. He starts going through everything and he's changed it all in terms of for the wife's schedule, the daughter's schedule.
The night that she gives her speeches, the night, her night out, and the daughter's team schedule now.
Yeah.
She can't play on
on the first team. Now she's second team. Yeah.
The Parisi Square with the older kids. She's got to play with her own age. And the doctor says, well, that makes sense because it's too dangerous for you to play with the older kids.
Yeah.
And so he changes this whole schedule to, you know, to try to protect her, which is going to come back to haunt him.
Definitely. But, and it was fine. I mean, everyone's kind of listening along, but it kind of hits it really comes to a climax when Jeffrey reads no Klingon friends. And Charlene, the mom, does not agree with that. She thinks that's unreasonable. And that's when she stands up and stands her ground, and they walk to the side, and the doctor sort of has a bit of a private conversation with her, saying that we're supposed to show a unified front. You know, why aren't you supporting me? And, you know, this is when Charlene loses it. She goes, well, maybe you should have asked for my opinion before deciding everything on your own, telling me that you've just made everything out for us. And everyone leaves. Jeffrey storms out. The wife says, like, I'll talk to you about this later. I don't want to argue in front of the kids.
You know, I think the doctor says to them, we're all going to have to make sacrifices.
Right.
For this to work. And they're like, wait a minute.
What sacrifice are you making?
Yeah. What sacrifice are you? And he's like, well, I'm going to cook.
The
daughter's like, you cook anyway one night a week. Like, so yeah, there's a lot of little stuff in there about family and relationship.
Yes.
Sounds very familiar.
And actually there was parallels. Well, the minute he said that, it reminded me of Bob Picardo's life off of camera. He did all the cooking.
Oh yeah, he did.
In his household. So he told me that I said, so when you have an early call time, you prepare. He goes, oh, I'm up even earlier and I'm making lunches for my daughters before they go to school. So he did cooking for his entire family all the time when he was on Voyager. Like he never relinquished that.
He loved to cook. Yeah.
He loved to cook. And I don't think his wife at the time knew how to cook is part of the reason too.
Yeah.
I don't think Linda cooked at all. So so this line reminded me of Bob Picardo's real life off camera.
That's funny.
Right?
That's funny.
So after everyone's left, Belle remains, and Belle sort of softens a little bit, you know, being a good daddy's girl. And she says, okay, dad, I'll be on the second team, right? It's okay. And, you know, she says, I think you're a really good father, a very good father. And she says that she loves him. And even if he's made a mess of things is what she says, right? But really we discover that because he made that decision, this is a decision that really causes her to be injured, because when you're playing on the second team and you're far better than everybody else, there's somebody that's just going to get in your way, and you've got to kind of, you know, move around them and something. And that's probably how she had the accident. And if she remained on the first team against the kids that are more experienced and more, you know, stronger, she would have been safe. You would have been fine.
These, like, little decisions and little choices that we make, this web that we're all, that families and that relationships are all really tied together.
And
so the decisions that the doctor makes about his family, laying down the law on some of these things, come back with consequences that he's going to have to deal with.
So, I just want to say, I think you're doing a really good job without your notes. You've been able to go to the other scenes that we're at, and you know where we're at really clearly, which is I'm very surprised. I almost thought maybe he lied and he didn't lose his notes.
I lost the notes, but no, what I did was I pulled up a synopsis of the episode just to help me follow along. So I do have a synopsis in front of me, but it's not notes.
No.
I'm trying to,
But you do have a cheat sheet. So
I do have a cheat sheet.
Yeah. So I am not as impressed as I was before. So I was impressed, super impressed. So I'm halfway impressed now.
Yeah.
So now we're in the shuttle.
I was smart enough to pull up a synopsis.
Good. At least you did that. Yeah.
I did.
But I told you I can handle the whole thing, and you can just kind of jump in. But so the shuttle. Now we're in the shuttle, and Tom is 3,000 kilometers from the Eddy, and he's dealing with a lot of turbulence, and he's going to follow the particle wake after the Eddy dissipates. So the Eddy dissipates. He activates the Bussard collectors, which have been modified according to Tuvok's suggestion, and it's working. But then Kim detects another eddy forming. Janeway quickly orders Paris to get out of there, but he is being drawn into the eddy. Kim cannot transport.
Into the eye of the hurricane.
Transporters are offline. Can't beam them out. Eddy dissipates, and so does Tom's shuttle with Tom in it. So
Tom
gone.
Is in subspace.
He's gone.
He's in subspace.
He's in sub. Well, he's crazy. Between space and subspace. So there's another layer where he's at. But yes, it's super crazy. Janeway, after commercial break, Janeway runs up and to Harry's station and asks if is Tom's shuttle still transmitting, similar to what the probe did. And after some tweaks and adjustments, they are able to hear Tom, very staticky. Janeway asks Tom where he is, and he says, "I wish I could tell you." And then we see this graphic
outside.
Oh my God. It's like sunset over water. It's like, beautiful. Wow. I was like, I'd like to go there, please. Yeah. It's absolutely gorgeous.
It's
so,
an Astral Eddy nursery is what
it is. It's
beautiful.
It's amazing. It's really nice.
Looks like you're like flying through a light volcano, if that describes anything.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like bubbling. Yes, it's cool. Anyway, it was very, very good visual effect by our team.
Super cool. So then we go to sickbay, and the doctor is working, but he is completely preoccupied with his family problems. Kes comes up and talks to him and realizes he's under some stress and says
Well, at first he kind of denies it. At first
he says, like, nothing's going on.
I'm just working on this test and I'm just having trouble. Can you do it? You know?
Yeah.
He kind of deflects.
That's right.
He's like, "Are you okay?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm fine." And he deflects on this test he's trying to run. And then she goes to run, and he comes in and he says, "You know what? It's not working."
Great. Yeah.
He's more honest, which is a great sign that he and Kes have this very close relationship. That
definitely.
That he's, you know, it's hard, but he's able to come be authentic with her.
Right. And it's almost like he's washing his hands of his little project. And that's, you know, Kes is like, "Hey, you just can't ignore them. You know, you've got to go and face face the reality, face the music." And then we jump back to the Hollow family home, and we come in, and now we see both the Klingon teenagers are there. And they're sitting there with Geoffrey, and one of the Klingon teenagers is holding a Klingon knife of some sort. And, you know,
the doctor is like, "Oh, what's that? Is that some kind of knife?" And they tell him something that it's
a Duktach is what it is, a Duktach knife. And it's given to every Klingon for his rite of ascension, which is a lie because the doctor already has a database of all Klingon, you know, weapons. Yeah, exactly. So he knows.
So he sort of listens.
Mm-hmm.
And they're clearly doing something that they're not supposed to be doing, that they have not been honest about already. Right. So he sort of traps them. And he goes, "Let me see this. Can I see it?" And they hand him the knife.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks at it and he goes, "You know, I knew what this is the whole time. It's, what is it?"
It's the dagger of Kutluch. Kutluch, used in a ritual of violence. It's a first bloodletting in preparation for becoming a warrior. And so he knows that. And he says, "Okay, is this what this is?" And of course, the Klingon teenager goes, "Yes, that is what it is."
Which was, by the way, that line was looped. Because he had dentures and stuff in when he goes,
He's like, he's talking out of the side of his mouth. He's like, "Yes." He had a lot of teeth going on.
A lot of teeth. He needs braces.
Oh my goodness. He needs braces.
He needs braces.
Does that mean there are no dentists on the Klingon homeworld?
Orthodontists in Klingon.
Klingon homeworld. Okay.
Nope.
Good to know. You know, the doctor asked the boys to leave because he realized that he's been lied to and this is something very dangerous. And boy, Geoffrey doesn't like that. Geoffrey is like, "Look what you've done. You've ruined it." Another phrase that every parent has heard from their child. You're ruining it. Everything.
Yeah.
So he's upset. And the doctor thinks that the Klingon friends were the ones that forced Geoffrey to do this. And Geoffrey's like, "No, this was my idea. I wanted to do this. I don't like, you know, I admire the Klingon culture and the, you know, the honor that's involved with the Klingon culture and the human culture, not so much." Right. Yeah. And, you know, that's when the doctor says, "Well, look, if you expect to live in this household, you're going to abide by my rules." And Geoffrey says, "Okay, if that's the way you want it, I'm not going to live here because I'm going to become a warrior. I'm going to become a warrior." And Charlene calls in at that point, and we find out that Belle has been involved in an accident.
Yeah, she's been injured some.
Right, right. We are now in the Hollow medical facility, and the doctor has basically, he's there with his daughter, and he's like, "I can't stop the hemorrhaging. You know, there's nothing we can do."
He says, "We've been in surgery for over 3 hours that me and this other doctor have tried everything either one of us know." And that there's one hemorrhage after another, that whatever happened is just getting worse.
He can't do
anything. She's gonna die.
Yeah.
And the wife is like, "That can't, I you know, I won't accept this.
Yeah. She exits to talk to Dr. Finley. She leaves. And then we have that great shot of the doctor sitting in the dark in utter despair over Belle. And he mouths Belle's name. And that's when she regains consciousness. And he goes over to the bedside and has that conversation with Belle, which just gets increasingly, you know, painful,
sad
and painful. And he can't take
see,
it.
I no. can't feel my legs. I
yeah.
can't.
Yeah, yeah. It's horrible. He ends the program, and that's his way of stopping this the pain that he's experiencing now, and he leaves. We're back in sick bay, and Kes asks the doctor, "Hey, how's the family?" And he very, you know, cheerfully says, "Well, you know, I've finished the program and that I'm done. So to return to it would be a complete waste of time, so I'm finished." Which is very strange to Kes. She's like, "Huh. What's going on here?" Then we jump to the bridge. And there is a communications band. The communications bandwidth has been widened by Taurus. So now we have a clear transmission to Paris. It's very clear. Paris says he's in an inner fold layer somewhere between space and subspace. And Paris believes the only way to get out is the same way he got.
Ride the waves.
So while this is happening, Tom gets thrown from his chair. And here's my question. Why don't we have seatbelts? I just don't understand. Why?
We don't have seatbelts.
No.
We don't have,
not until J.J. Abrams' rehash of the 2000 and his initial Star Trek film where we see Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto as Spock. Then you see seatbelts, these automatic seatbelts that come out in that movie. But up until that film, TNG, Voyager, DS9, Enterprise, the original series, no seatbelts anywhere to be seen.
I have seatbelts in both my cars.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like Starfleet can tell them where to go, how they work.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
We need a
seatbelt. I think I did that stunt myself. I think I did that fall and everything.
Was that you? Okay.
I think so.
All right. I thought maybe the hair looked a little bit different from behind. It looked a little
maybe,
darker.
Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah. I almost feel like it probably might not have been you.
Well, but you didn't see my face, and usually they wouldn't allow us to do a stunt if we don't see our face. So,
Okay.
It may not have been.
Okay. Tom does get out of the Yeti, and Harry beams the shuttle and Tom back onto Voyager.
Yep.
And now we're in sick bay, where the doctor is treating Paris's mild concussion. And then he freaks out about Paris's risky behavior, saying people like you who court danger should be thrown into the brig. And that's when Paris realizes, whoa. Holy moly. You know, I mean, something's going on with the doctor.
Yeah.
And truly dealing with Belle's imminent death has completely affected him to where he's lashing out at Paris right now. Right. And the doctor tells Paris that he's essentially shut down the program. He will not be going back. And that's when that he can't face it. It's just too difficult. And that's when Paris has the heart
to heart. Better for me not to go back there. And Paris is like, is it better?
Mm-hmm.
Like, really?
Mm-hmm.
And then Paris has this long kind of,
long speech, man.
It's
it's good though, man. You knocked it out of the park. You did very well.
It goes on a long time, but he says, you know, basically, like, sure, everybody would avoid pain if they could, but in real life we can't avoid pain.
That's right.
Like, you know, you can just shut off this program, but we can't do that in real life.
Yeah.
Things happen. And basically, in the end, I lost my notes. So,
would you want me to pick up a little bit? I'll pick it up a little bit.
I just wanted to say, like, Paris is ultimately is saying, through the things that wound us, that hurt us, that are hard for us, the things that we suffer, that by staying in the game of life and sticking together, like the crew of Voyager, all lost family, lost things when they.
Right.
Were flung to the Delta Quadrant, but they have grown closer and learned so much through the suffering and the loss and the hurt that they've experienced together.
Right.
And that's part of real life. That's ultimately kind of what Paris says.
Paris tells the doctor, you created this program to experience what it's like to have a family. So that means you have to experience the good times and the bad, and you can't have one without the other. And the doctor says, well, I fail to see why not. So he feels like you can have a family without any of the bad times.
Yeah.
And that's when Paris uses the example of the Voyager crew. Everyone had people that they left behind. okay, when we left the Alpha Quadrant. And so we all suffered a loss, but that loss has brought us all closer together. We found support, we found friendship, we have become a family, in part because of the pain that we have shared. And Paris says that, look, if you turn your back on this program, you're always going to be stuck at this point. You will never have the chance to say goodbye to your daughter, or you will never be there for your wife and son when they need you the most. And you'll be cheating yourself of the chance to have their love and support. So in the long run, you're going to miss out on the whole point of what it means to have a family, which then, of course, rings the doctor's like, wow, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And we go back to the Hollow Medical Facility. Clearly the doctor has taken Paris's advice and he continues the program. Belle is still on the bed and we have this just, you know, scene that just tears you apart. She's asking if she's going to die.
I was tearing up.
Oh, me too.
Tearing up. I mean, it's always just tragic. It's not the way the world's supposed to work when a child dies.
Yes. You
know? And so definitely. Just that story alone, but having it sort of seeing it through the doctor's eyes, who's such an innocent sort of character in so many ways, you know, he doesn't know human experience. And we're seeing it through his eyes this moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the wife sobbing and
he doesn't lie to her to say, you know, because I kept thinking when she asked the doctor, am I going to die? I thought, is he going to sort of euphemistically say, no, you'll be fine. But he didn't, you know, he just said, yeah, it's going
to
happen.
He said, you're too sick to live, to get better or something. And she says, stay with me.
I won't be afraid. Right. And he says, I will be right here. I promise. That's when Charlene and Jeffrey arrive. Jeffrey and the doctor have that moment of reconciliation where he hugs his father and he gives Belle her blanket. And so we end, you know, there's the wife, Charlene, is crying. And so is the son. They embrace and the doctor kind of watches and then he comes in for the embrace and we leave. The final scene is of the entire family embracing. So he has basically come to grips with the passing of the daughter. He's faced it. And that's the end of the show. Very touching and very,
very moving. I really teared up. I really did.
Yeah. Anybody who's a parent is going to probably cry at this scene, is my guess.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
What is your lesson from this?
Well, I think I've lost my notes, so I can't remember how I put it. But I think it ultimately comes down to kind of the speech that Tom Paris gave.
Yeah.
The ideas in that speech, which are, you know, you can't avoid the pain of real life.
Yeah.
Real life has
ups and downs, good and bad, right?
Good and bad and joy and pain.
Yeah.
And it's actually richer with both of those things.
Exactly.
That life is richer with the full experience. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Something like that.
I agree. Yeah, that's great. You're right on target there. I also would like to add that the other lesson that I get from this is that, especially when he lashes out at Paris, saying that anybody who courts danger should be thrown in the brig. And the lesson there is that in life, when you are out and about, you are always going to deal with people that may be unsavory, that may come off, you know, brusque or rude or just downright, you know, a jerk. And instead of matching their level and going toe to toe and becoming aggressive and violent about it, starting a fight, you know, or allowing the male ego to come into play, or any ego to come into play, just to realize that 99 times out of 100, that attitude or that whatever has nothing to do with you. It has to do with that person and what they're dealing with in their own life. You know what I'm saying? They're using, you don't know the person. Yeah. So that person that you're interacting with in public, who's acting horribly, you have no idea if their sibling or if there's some relative just passed away recently, or if something happened that was so cataclysmic in their own life that they're now kind of taking it out on everyone around them. And if you can look at it that way and take a second to breathe and take a second to step back, that's going to actually help stop a lot of the things that, you know, the violence and aggression that our culture or we as humans have endured over the over time, right? It's just something that can stop people from getting riled up because the other person's all upset, right, about something. So it's sort of a nice lesson.
Simple rule to live by just the other day. Mm-hmm. It was two rules. It's they said, if you want to be happy in life, if you want to have a happy life, a peaceful and fulfilled life, do two things. One is assume the best in everyone. Mm-hmm. Start with assuming they're the best. Instead of assuming that someone is being manipulative, instead of assuming that someone is trying to hurt you or cheat you or, you know, or me, let me talk about me. Instead of assume that people are, you know, assume the best. First of all, start there. And then the second thing is, be inquisitive, be curious, ask questions. Mm. If I assume the best about people and then I want to learn and I say, oh, tell me about your day today. Tell me about, oh, you're angry or, you know, it's been a tough day. Tell me more about that. How is it tough for you?
Yeah.
Explain that to me, you know.
Yeah.
Assume the best and be inquisitive. And I think those are, I think those are the best rules to live by I've ever heard.
Honestly. Yeah.
Assuming the best and being curious, asking questions, you know, being open to learning something you don't expect.
Yes. Good episode.
Very good episode.
Join us next week, guys, when Robbie and I review Distant Origin.
Yes.
See you guys.
See you then.
Bye.
Bye.